You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. Howdy, everyone. And I say howdy with a particular relish this time. I got on my cowboy hat, my six gun on my hip, and this in my left hand. No, that's not a shotgun. It's a lever-action rifle. Turns out some of you have been noticing how much fun I've been having with these lever guns recently, and you asked me to do a show on them. So, I figured, you know what? Well, all this talk about these so-called assault weapons on Capitol Hill nowadays. Gosh, you'd think anything semi-auto came straight from the devil himself listening to these people. Well, we talked about those supposedly evil so-called assault weapons in episode 11. We talked about it in detail. Everyone's talking about it, it seems. Makes a lot of people forget that there are other types out there, too. So, let's make like Winnetou and old Shatterhand in those old Carl May-inspired movies, shall we? Let's go back to a bygone era. The cowboy era. Hey, that kind of fits, doesn't it? Any of you ever watch the Winnetou movies? If you haven't, you're missing out. But fortunately, they're up on YouTube. Westerns in the old-fashioned tradition. Really good stuff. Oh, and the Native American dude? He's the good guy and the major star, too. That's pretty good back in the 1960s, which is when these movies were made. I got a buddy, an American fella. He's an army brat, grew up in Germany. Speaks it just like they do. Imagine this. A bit of a redneck fella with a true, authentic, redneck, cowboy-ish sort of accent who, oh, by the way, speaks fluent German as well as any German citizen. He watched those movies as a kid. Well, big surprise, he likes lever guns, too. And he's far from the only one. Huh, not by a long shot. Well, no pun intended there, but it was kind of nice. Anyways, how come? Why? What's up with these? We got semi-auto rifles. What's with lever guns? Where's the appeal when you can just grab an AR-10 or an H&K 91 semi-auto and .308 Winchester and quote-unquote do more with it? Well, sure, a bit of it's nostalgia, can't deny that. But there's been a modern twist on lever guns in the last couple decades. That's what we're going to talk about. That modern twist. Well, maybe it's really a modern twist on an old idea. Our subject. Rifles chambered for revolver cartridges. Now, I mentioned this back in episode 2, the idea of rifles chambered in revolver cartridges. Back then, we talked about guns that I think are cool. One of them, if you may recall, was a lever gun, specifically the Ruger Model 9644. I talked about that specific firearm at some length, so if you really want to hear about that, then I suggest having a listen to episode 2. All that rifle did was get me started. Oh boy, I have learned a fair amount about this particular class of rifle in the last 6 months. So let's talk about them. We'll dive deep into lever guns as soon as we get back from Station ID break, so stick around, y'all.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
Lever guns, lever guns. Sometimes you just gotta talk lever guns, right? Number of advantages to lever guns generally, actually, and revolver cartridge versions in particular. Several companies make them, or used to make them. You got Puma, Chiappa, Rossi, Ruger, Savage, and, of course, the granddads of lever guns, the various Winchester and Henry models. Now, for completeness, Ruger's got a version of their Model 77 series, chambered in .357 Magnum and .44 Magnum. Any of you have ever fired a Model 77 Hawkeye? Just imagine that chambered for a handgun cartridge. That's it. I have fired one of these. It was a model 77/357. Yep, it's a whole lot of fun. Oh, yeah. I could have fired it all day. Now, we're focusing on lever guns here, since I simply have a lot more experience with them. But almost everything that applies to the lever guns also applies to these bolt-action Ruger 77s as well. By the way, I do need to make a slight correction on something I'd said previously. I've mentioned before that my dad had gotten started with the 3220 back when he was a kid. I was wrong. It was actually the 3840. Yep, a Winchester rifle chambered for a revolver cartridge. Wow, there's that theme again. So what's up with this idea? Well, there are a number of advantages to doing this, it turns out. Right now, we're in the middle of a major ammo shortage. There's all sorts of panic buying going on because of the actions of the antis in the wake of the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting. Gun stores can't keep ammo in stock, I'm sure you've all noticed. But during normal periods, meaning non-panic periods, ammunition is relatively inexpensive, at least for these rifles chambered for handgun cartridges, and the ammunition is plentiful. I don't care what store you go into that sells ammo, they're always going to carry 38 Special, 357 Magnum, 44 Magnum, and most often 45 Colt. Very often they'll also carry a 44 Special. So you can get ammo anywhere. Granted, that also applies to the 30-30, but well, since people typically go through handgun cartridges a lot more than they do the bottlenecked rifle cartridges, economies of scale come into play. Your cost per round is typically going to be a bit lower, and especially so for 38 Special or 357 Magnum. I know, the 38 Special round is absolutely anemic compared to the power of the 30-30 round. They're not in the same class. Yes, I know. Even the 357 Magnum round out of a standard service size revolver cannot compare, can't even begin to compare to a 30-30's power. No question. But these handgun cartridges, folks, especially the Magnum ones, they turn into totally different animals when you fire them out of rifle-length barrels instead of handgun-length barrels. Turns out the powder used in the 357 Magnum and the 44 Magnum rounds has a lot more oomph left in it after it leaves even a 6-inch handgun barrel. That's why you get that bright muzzle flash out of a revolver when you shoot them. However, a 16 or 18-inch rifle will take much better advantage of all that powder. I finally bought a chronograph a few months ago. Got a load in 357 Magnum that hits a little over 1,200 feet per second out of the 4-inch revolver. This is a full-power load, by the way, with a 150-grain cast bullet. Now, I put that same round into a Rossi 92 with a 16-inch barrel. That very same round now hits just shy of 1,800 feet per second. That's about a 550-foot-per-second increase, folks. And, oh, by the way, that's the slightly conservative number. Now, let's compare this with the 30-30 Winchester. Since I'm a reloader, of course, I've got a few reloading manuals. They list velocities. With this 357 Magnum rifle, matter of fact, I'll grab the book here. Here we are. With this 357 Magnum rifle, the slowest load is showing at 1,840 feet per second with a 150-grain jacketed bullet. Compare that to my 1,800 feet per second with my 150-grain cast bullet. That's pretty close. Yes, folks, we are now nipping at the heels of an actual rifle round with our little 357 Magnum. Now let's talk about what happens when you do this with a 44 Magnum. Being the good, ethical hand loader that I am, naturally, I've got a load for that, too. This load uses a 200-grain cast bullet that my chronograph says is traveling at just a tick over 2,000 feet per second. Now, let's compare that to the 30-30. Again, consulting the book here, the closest look the book's got is a 190-grain cast bullet traveling at about 2,050 feet per second. That's, by the way, at an operating pressure of about 37,600 PSI. That's the standard pressure for a full-power 30-30 load, so we're pretty much comparing apples to apples. Consider that the 44 Magnum cartridge, when shot out of a rifle, delivers the same power out of that muzzle as an actual rifle cartridge. Mine is a 2,000 foot per second 200-grain bullet load. The book says 190-grain bullet at 2050. That's comparable. And that, by the way, is a max load. The 45 Colt, by the way, that old classic cowboy cartridge, that's already a reasonably powerful cartridge. Let's talk about that. U.S. Army, it turns out, did some tests back in, I don't think it was 1910, thereabouts. This was to figure out the effectiveness of military handgun cartridges in a battle situation. It's pretty important to know that sort of thing if you're going to put the round into battle. Remember, the 45 Colt came out in 1873 as the official U.S. Army handgun cartridge, and by the way, was still in military usage in the early 1900s. Remember, the M1911 pistol didn't come out until, of course, the year 1911. Back then, 100 years ago, we didn't have nice modern tools like ballistic gelatin, so what'd they use? Cattle that had already been killed somehow. Hey, it's what they had. Well, turns out the 45 Colt is already capable of going all the way through an entire cow from port to starboard. Oh, and that includes the original black powder loadings. We're not talking smokeless loads yet. Remember, 255 grain bullet, traveling at 950 feet per second. That is not a wimpy load. It can do even more when it's loaded to the so-called, Ruger-only loads. This is what the more modern powders like, say, 2400, H110, W296, all that sort of stuff. Turns out that modern lever guns, like, for instance, Marlin's 1894, Rossi's 92, heck, even the Winchesters, all of those are quite capable of handling the Ruger-only loads as well. You watch one of Hickok 45's videos, and he demonstrates this very fact with a 45 Colt lever gun. This is due to modern advances in steel and metallurgy. Folks, we've just simply gotten better at making metal stronger over the years. Plus, let's face it, the Winchester 92 and 94 designs are simply good, strong designs to begin with. Basically, with modern steel and modern Magnum handgun loads, you got a lot of power to bring to, well, bear. Yuck, yuck, ba-dum-psh. Let's also, by the way, not forget these modern lever guns can also shoot the special rounds. Why does that matter? Simple. Lower recoil. I've shot my Powder Puff 38 special load in the 16-inch barrel lots of times by now. Feels just like shooting a 22. I was initially a little concerned about maybe leaving one of the bullets in that longer barrel because of how light this load is. Well, it turns out they're exiting at about 800 feet per second, so no worries at all. Gotta love chronographs, folks. I also have a sort of plus P 44 special load. This does pretty darn well in the 96-44's 18-inch barrel, too. Now, I forgot to chronograph that one, but, well, hey, it's giving me small groups, and every time I fire, there's another hole in the target, so it's a good load. This also means that if I want to take the wheel gun to the range for practice, which, given my job, I need to do pretty regularly, guess what? I can also tote along the rifle. It shoots the same ammo. Now, imagine, you're out hunting on the East Coast, I don't know, or maybe Michigan or anywhere else where the woods can be pretty thick. This is a real advantage. Say you're in Big Bear country. You're out deer or hog hunting or whatever. You got your 44 Magnum rifle for the deer or the hog. But then you see a rather scary sight. A big brown bear is coming at you. This is not normally a good thing. Well, actually, it's not a good thing under any circumstances. But no problem, because guess what? You were smart enough to also pack your 44 Magnum revolver, and you're ready to go. Ammo's not going to be a problem, of course. You already got it for your rifle. You don't need to worry about multiple types of cartridges. Just bring a box of 50 rounds, load up your chambers, and you're ready. This is why the cowboys did that. See, they needed to pack as lightly as they could. They're on horseback all day, of course. Back then, the 44-40 was the most common cartridge out on the frontier. Unfortunately, see, Colt wouldn't let anyone else chamber guns for their, well, then still proprietary 45 Colt cartridge. This is because the patents hadn't yet expired on it. But they didn't want to lose business to other companies out there either. So, what did Colt do? They chambered their famous peacemaker, also known as the Single Action Army, in, guess what? 44-40. Same as what Winchester's rifle was chambered for. People bought up this combination in droves, folks. I'll bet that's the kind of setup old Shatterhand had with him back when he was, you know, in out there with Winnetou in the movies. I'll bet it was real similar. Also, remember back then, the cowboys often cast their own bullets. Yes, campfires do get hot enough to do bullet casting. That meant there were also reloaders out there in the field. Yeah, they'd carry around some black powder and the powder horns, as we call them. They'd carry primers, some lead, and a mold. When you're way out there in the frontier, folks, you can't just run to the local gun store and say, "Hey, give me some components, partner." Not gonna happen. So, the more you stick with one cartridge, the easier the logistics were for you. Oh, and speaking of reloading, we get those same advantages today. Ain't unchanged. Remember, these are commonly available handgun cartridges. I continue to be amazed at the sheer amount of brass people leave for me to pick up. Seriously, folks. 38 and 357 brass is such easy pickings. It's ridiculous. In my range, I see all sorts of people firing the 44 mags, too, so that helps out in a big way, too. Even if you have to buy the brass, say you're not fortunate to be close to a range like I am, even if you got to buy your brass, well, there are a number of companies that sell it. Starline sells really good brass for very reasonable prices. Remington, Winchester, heck, even Hornady, if you're willing to pay Hornady prices, they sell them, too. And, of course, being straight-walled handgun cartridges, I cannot think of an easier type of cartridge to reload than a straight-walled handgun cartridge, especially the revolver cartridges. Those of you who've seen my reloading videos, you know the whole goal of them is to show you how easy it is to do it. Case prep is dead simple. It's not like with rifle cases where you got to trim them, you know, worry about incipient case head separation, all that stuff. My case prep, it's one thing. It's one step. Tumbling. That's it. With a bottleneck rifle cartridge like the 30-30, I need to do a lot more. Also, being handgun cases, they are very amenable to progressive presses for those of you, like me, who do a reasonably fair amount of shooting. That means you can use your existing setup for your rifle, too. Of course, bullet selection, as always, matters for the task at hand. That includes when you're shooting a lever gun chambered for a handgun cartridge. For bear or tough hogs, you probably want jacketed soft points. For deer, the hollow points are probably a good idea. If you're using cast bullets, then, keep them BHN 12 or softer. That's a good idea. Lyman's 49th edition, the Reloading Handbook, has a page showing a 264 grain cast bullet that was recovered from a wild pig. The bullet was shot at around 1,700 feet per second. Right around the velocities for what we're talking about here, these lever guns chambered for revolver cartridges, 1,700 feet per second. It was BHN 12 and mushroomed perfectly, this bullet was. Now, when we come back from station ID break, we're going to talk about the advantages of these handgun round chamber lever guns as home defense pieces. Stay tuned.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or a $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
Welcome back, partners. We're talking about them thar lever guns. We mentioned the cowboys like their rifles chambered for the same round as their sidearm for logistical reasons. A lot of settlers out west had a similar view. Now we're going to discuss why they had that view. See, nearly all lever guns out here have what's called a tube or tubular magazine. Yeah, gnarly dude. Say you have a Winchester 30-30. Cartridge is 51 millimeters long. Well, the brass. Typically, the rifles hold about, 5 or 6 rounds in the tubular magazine. That's pretty good if you're engaging enemy targets at 150 to 200 yards, which is well within a 30-30's capabilities. But what happens when you got a posse, a gang, or whatever else that's coming at you? You're probably not, let's face it, going to score a hit every single time, every time you pull the trigger. So why? Well, they're coming on horseback at fairly high speed. That's what we call, folks, a moving target. So pretty soon, enough of them are going to get close enough to present a problem. You got five or so shots before you need to reload that rifle again. What do you do? Fortunately, the old 44-40 rifles could have at least 10, and in some cases even as many as 15 rounds in that tubular magazine. You could reload as needed, sure, just like with the 30-30, but when there would be a lull in the actual fighting, you could restoke that 44-40 with another full complement of 10 to 15 rounds. Huh, look out, posse. Now, fast forward to today, the year 2013, the 21st century. A 16-inch barreled Winchester clone like, say, the Pumas, the Rossies, the Ubertis, will hold 8 rounds of .357 Magnum, or maybe 9 rounds of .38 Special in the tubular magazine. You get a 20-inch barrel, that goes to 10 or 11 rounds. And I hear they still make the 24-inch barrel models that'll take 15 rounds like back in the old days. I know what you're thinking. Oh, but the days of the OK Corral are long gone. Oh, really? Hast thou forgotten, folks, about something called a natural disaster? I remind you of Superstorm Sandy that did its number on New York and New Jersey late last year. How were things up there? Well, we call it without rule of law, typically. Pretty rough. Hurricane Katrina, by the way, had the same effect in 2005. Looting. Roving gangs. Rioters. That's a very dangerous situation, folks. Up close and personal. Urban violence. Well, we know that .357 Magnum has been the gold standard for stopping power for a long time. That's why the cops used it for so long. Now, imagine 10 to 15 rounds of that stopping power, turbocharged by that longer barrel. Huh, oh yeah, I'm all over that. This is especially pertinent in places like, say, New York, California, Maryland, New Jersey, and so on. This is where they have pretty severe magazine restrictions for handguns. Well, anything, really. New York State just recently limited their magazine capacity to, get this, 7 rounds. So revolvers are probably going to be just as popular in those places as the semi-auto pistols are. Oh, and then consider Chicago. This is a place where handguns are still banned at this point. In all of these places, far as I know, semi-auto rifles like AR-15s are deemed quote-unquote assault weapons, and they're thus banned or required to be registered. To my knowledge, they neither ban nor require this ridiculous registration on lever-action rifles. At urban distances, lever guns are very accurate. 10 rounds of .357 Magnum, .44 Magnum, or .45 Colt out of a rifle barrel will definitely get a marauding gang's attention. Matter of fact, I'm going to tell you a little story kind of along these lines. It's about my dad. He was on the show for episode 10. I suggest you listen to that one. That was really a lot of fun. I'm still geeking out over episode 10 having him on the show. Well, among many things that he told me, one of them was about how things were. You know, they were very prejudiced back in that day. This is when the Jim Crow laws were still, unfortunately, very much on the books. Remember I told you he became pretty good with that .38-40 rifle? Well, it's a good thing, because he ended up needing to grab one for use in defense of a loved one. See, after Grandpa and Grandma got married, she left the cabaret showgirl business, and he left the gambling profession. He was actually quite good. But nonetheless, they left those professions, you know, to take on respectable vocations for a married couple. She became the homemaker, and he became an auto mechanic. Had his own shop. Grandpa had a gift for not just mathematics, it turns out, but also mechanics, so he ended up becoming a master auto mechanic. Worked on all sorts of automobiles. Matter of fact, he was so good that even a whole lot of white people there in Pontiac brought their cars to him, and this was in a day when that wasn't done. When it came to anything involving auto mechanics, he was the man. Well, turns out one white customer decided to get pretty irate at the fees Grandpa charged for fixing the car. So much so that this fella, get this, pulled a shotgun on my grandpa. Oh, meanwhile shouting at him all sorts of stuff, including the N-word and such as that. Well, Dad saw this and did not like that one bit. He went straight for the 38-40 rifle from in the shop, and within a few seconds had it pointed right at this dude who was threatening my grandpa. Now, turns out Dad didn't have to shoot, because, now this is a show of old-school manliness. Grandpa walked right at this dude, calmly saying, "You ain't gonna fire that gun." Scared this dude into shock. Grandpa grabbed that shotgun out of this fellow's hands, broke it over his knee, tossed it in the creek, and then proceeded to open up a nice big can of old-fashioned Southern-style whoop-ass on this fella. Afterwards, Grandpa just as calmly walked into the shop, where he saw Dad with a 38-40 lever gun. Asked him, "What you doing with that gun, boy? You don't need that. Go put it away." Well, that's the old folks for you. But Grandpa did make it clear in his own old-fashioned He-Man way that he did appreciate his son, my dad, being ready to defend him if need be. Apparently, the aunties seem to forget that self-defense is still necessary in this world. I'll bet that fellow who got dragged to death by those Klansmen in Jasper, Texas, James Byrd was his name. I'll bet he sure wished he had some kind of firearm on him right about then, huh? Right after this station ID break, we'll discuss the potential disadvantages to these handgun round-chambered lever rifles. See you in a bit.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, GunRightsRadio.com.
Okay, we're back. We've been talking about the advantages of lever guns chambered specifically for handgun cartridges. The 38 and 357, the 44s, and the 45 Colt, those are the typical ones. Also, there's the 44-40. Well, not only are they just plain fun, but they're also remarkably utilitarian. They're just plain useful, too. But are there any minuses to this old idea from the days of the 44-40? Well, we know there's no such thing as a free lunch. Everything's a trade-off. So, the answer is yes, of course there are a few disadvantages. And the biggest one has to do with terminal ballistics. Let's face it, folks. No handgun cartridge is ever going to give you the ballistic performance that a rifle cartridge will. There's just no way a .357 Magnum or a .44 Magnum, heck, even a .454 Casull, is going to be able to reach out and drop that deer or elk at 250 yards like you can with a .30-30. And now that Hornady's got their new lever revolution bullets and ammo, I think they call the bullets the FTX line. You can actually safely use pointed Spitzer bullets, these particular ones, in tubular magazines. You couldn't do that before. Combined with the new lever revolution powder that they've got, the 30-30 just turned into a 350-yard cartridge, maybe more depending on how good a shot you are. I'm serious. Great-great-granddad's 30-30 just became a reasonably long-range shooter. By contrast, the max effective range of a lever gun on a revolver cartridge, that's about, 150 yards. And I'd say 125 yards is really more realistic. These are not long-range implements. They're meant for closer-in hunting in the brush or self-defense against a gang of thugs about to bear down on you. You simply will not get the range with one of these that you will get with the 30-30. This is because of something called ballistic coefficient. In a nutshell, this is a measurement of how well a bullet resists the effects of air blowing it around. That includes not only how much a crosswind will blow it off course, but also how well the bullet cuts through the air due to air resistance. Where that .357 or .44 Magnum bullet will start petering out after about 150 yards, the 30-30 bullet is simply more aerodynamic. It'll keep right on going. So if you're hunting in the plains, don't take your .357, your .44 or .45 Colt lever gun. Take your 30-30. Or, heck, even better, your .308 Winchester bolt gun or similar. Another advantage the 30-30 lever guns have over the .357s, the .44s, and the .45 Colts is that the guns are considerably lower priced and a lot more available. You can find 30-30 lever guns of various types in used gun racks all day for about $300. Oh, and that's in good condition, too. I know because I've seen them on our racks. Now, this is no knock on the 30-30. Just the opposite, as a matter of fact. It's a testament to how well it puts venison on the table. Lots and lots of people have bought these rifles over the decades. Lots. That doesn't happen if the product sucks. It's like you go on the used car market and you look for Toyota Corollas and Honda Civics and Accords from the 1990s. Parts are everywhere. The car's all over the place. And both the cars and their parts are inexpensive. That's what happens. That's the sort of thing that happens when you're a success. You end up all over the place. You know, the norm. Nothing special. Everyone's got one. All that. That's what the 3030 is. Because it works. 30-06 Remington 700 bolt guns are the same way. By contrast, the lever guns, chambered and handgun cartridges tend to be rather less available, so the prices are higher. How come? Well, a couple reasons. The first, cowboy action shooters. These folks are snapping up these things like crazy for their single action shooting society competitions. These competitions are really popular. A whole lot of people do cowboy action shooting. One of the required guns is a lever action, preferably chambered for a revolver cartridge of some sort. Usually that means .357 Magnum, .44 Magnum, .44-40, and, of course, .45 Colt. Reason number two. Hunters who live where there's thick woods, like the East Coast. These folks have found out that these handgun-chambered rifles are not only very handy like any other lever gun, but they also do really well within their range limitations. Now, given that a 125-yard shot, is considered pretty long in such woods, and I've been out in these woods hunting myself, and that is a long shot. Well, 125 yards, that's within the range limitations of these rifles. There are a whole lot of deer and wild pigs in these woods east of the Mississippi River. Since the black bears out east aren't nearly as large as the brown and grizzly bears out west, a .357 Magnum is enough to dispatch an unruly black bear, and even then, black bears tend to avoid humans. Generally, you leave them alone, they leave you alone. So, of course, a .44 Magnum is certainly enough rifle for the East Coast. These two reasons, cowboy action shooters and hunters who have rediscovered the advantages of sidearms and rifles chambered for the same cartridge, are why these lever guns tend to be a bit, pricier than their 30-30 versions. It's also why they tend to not be too common on the used gun racks. They tend to get snapped up pretty fast, I know because I was shopping for one. So you're probably looking at getting a new one. That means waiting a few weeks. Or right now with the panic, maybe a few months. But if you can get your hands on one of these, oh boy, are they a lot of fun, let me tell you. They're relatively inexpensive to shoot, too, once you get the rifle in your hands. Hey, it's handgun ammo. Remember, economies of scale and all. Since they're lever guns, no, they're not as fast as those tactic-cool semi-autos. But you can get pretty darn fast with a lever gun with some practice. Plus, lever guns aren't nearly as hard on your brass as a lot of these semi-autos. And all this is why I think, well, they're really cool and worthy of your consideration. Not only do you get the old-fashioned nostalgia, but they're just as useful tools today as they were back in the days when the 4440 roamed the frontier. And for the same reasons. You know, it seems like the more things change, the more they really do stay the same, huh? This is Cowboy T signing off. Till next time. Till then, safe shooting, keep practicing, and thanks for listening.